worth. When young Ronald Baker, from a good family and a good school, was found stabbed to death with his throat slashed in a railroad tunnel at the edge of town, I thought I had caught my ride. The case had all the ingredients, good kid, bad end. Throw in the occult pentagrams painted on the walls and all the questions without answers, and I thought I had caught the brass ring as a writer specializing in murder. It was a story that would be hard to shove off the front page. From the start, the case was steeped in mystery and the unexplainable. But the police were impenetrable. The story eventually died for lack of oxygen. I left journalism and went into the business of fiction. But the investigators, they didn't stop. It was after I was out that I learned what I didn't know then, about the relentless detectives who pursued the case across many years and many states, who were undaunted, unafraid, and unstoppable. And that's the story you have here. You have the inside story told by Rick Jackson, the detective who lived it, and Matthew McGough, the skilled writer he's partnered with to tell it. A perfect combination of storytelling. Ride with them now into this darkness. The book cuts through the exaggerated newspaper accounts and the hysterical headlines. You'll ride with the detectives who never took their eyes off the prize of justice, who worked diligently to decipher what was true and what was not, what was vital and what was clever deflection. You'll find a family whose grief only grew with each passing year. This is a story that doesn't end with convictions and sentences, but has waves that draw meaning even today. They say if you want to get the facts, read a newspaper. If you want to get the truth, read a novel. I think that's true. It's why I made that jump. But it's not true all the time. Not here, not with this story. This story gives you the truth of character in a pair of relentless detectives, in a damaged family, and in the exploration of a broken system. It offers redemption and hope in those same individuals who persevere despite the obstacles and odds. This is an audiobook that is surely about killers, but they don't take the spotlight. That belongs to the detectives who worked the case, whose eyes were not jaundiced, and who steadily, methodically closed in. In them you find humanity and hope in a city where killers are often kings. Michael Connelly, Los Angeles.
Part 1. The Betrayal. Chapter 1. Holy Terror. June 21 to 22, 1990. It happens once a year. That year, it was on a Thursday morning. 8:33 to be exact. It set things in motion. It altered lives. None for the better. It was the summer solstice, the moment when Earth's rotational axis, the imaginary line that runs between the North and South poles, achieves its maximum tilt toward the sun. From Earth, the sun appears at its highest point in the sky. Not for another year does the Northern Hemisphere receive so much light in a single day. It passes unnoticed by most. Yet the summer solstice has been observed for millennia, since the age of Stonehenge and the pyramids of Giza at least, and likely even earlier. Throughout human history, cultures around the world have granted it spiritual significance. It inspired Shakespeare, who used it for the plot of one of his most famous comedies, A Midsummer Night's Dream. In Shakespeare's time, the summer solstice was a celebratory occasion marked by open-air feasts, and renowned for its aura of magic and mystery. That year, 1990, in Los Angeles, the summer solstice figured in a darker plot, one more akin in cruelty to a Shakespearean tragedy. The story begins late on Thursday, June 21, the night of the astronomical solstice. Four teenagers in the San Fernando Valley, two boys and two girls, wanted a late-night thrill. The boys, Roland and Timo, were already out of high school. Amy and Melissa were younger. Amy was 16 at the time. Earlier that evening, they had attended a youth group meeting together. Afterward, Amy asked Roland for a ride home, although she didn't really